Okay, Blake, I've been working on some jingles for our new website launch. So I've got churchy, churchy, church, church gear.
Toby, what have I told you about singing on the podcast? It doesn't work. But you know what is working? Our new website. You can actually get it to load on your phone. You can actually buy a new piece of gear without your phone bursting into flames.
Well, what if I spelled it out like C-H-U-R-C-G-E-R?
Toby, stop. That is not working. But you know what is working? The search bar on our website. You can actually search speakers and speakers will appear. No joke, that didn't always work.
Okay, what if I just did something like go to churchgear.com?
You know what? That one works.
Blake, what's your happy place?
What's the opposite of sitting right next to you?
Welcome to the Church Gear Podcast, where we pull the tech out of the booth and onto the stage to share the most outlandish stories and hidden wisdom from the tech trenches. And now, here are your hosts.
I'm your host, Blake Hodges, a man who would rather be sitting in a wet pile of garbage than sitting here smelling Toby. And I'm here with my smelly co-host who forgot to shower for the first time this year, Toby Walters.
Why is this intro so mean?
Because you know what I should have
what
done?
What did I do?
Because you've been sick all day and like, I don't know if I'm going to make it or not. And, you know, I've got some spite.
Okay. Well, I did suggest that, you know, I go back to bed, but you were like, Toby, no, we have to get the episode out. It's Chad.
The show must go on.
I know.
Also, you
I
just
get
gave
it.
Away the guest.
I mean, it's...
The sickness has got you off your A game. All right, tell us the intro story.
So
let's abuse Toby while he's
yes,
sick.
My happy place when I'm not. So clearly people can, I would assume, can tell I'm a bit under the weather. I think I have a cold or allergies, whatever it is. I have no problem transferring it to you now that you've been so mean to me. But
Toby, I'm indestructible. I'm like a cockroach, remember?
But we're going to talk a lot of audio stuff today, which you, what did you say before we started?
You said you know enough to be dangerous, and I know enough to be reckless.
Great. Blake, I think you know enough about everything to be reckless because that's just your MO.
Why, thank you.
But my happy place growing up and let's say by the time I turned about 16 was recording studios. Like there is just something about a recording studio that I absolutely fell in love with. I don't know if this gear, the environment, and much more so for me than a live environment. Like I just enjoyed, it's kind of like, you know, if you said, well, I much prefer to record a podcast in a controlled environment rather than go speak in front of a live audience. Like,
well, then they'd catch all of our mess ups. We have 37 takes that we do of this episode every time.
I would jump into wet garbage before I do 37 takes of this with you.
And you'd find me sitting there.
But I got, so, you know, most of our listeners kind of know some about my story that I got to help start a recording studio and build it in our church basement when I was a teenager and ended up recording and producing bands in the church basement. And we called it the Basement Recording Studio. It was, you know, very meta back in 1996.
Basement Records would have been a really good name.
Yeah. Like their venues in Nashville, the basement East.
Well, there it is.
And then I also got, just over the years, like I never worked in major studios, but growing up in Southern California and then now having lived in Nashville for 12 years, like I got the opportunity to just walk into some major studios, got the opportunity to record like with my university jazz band. We did one day at a major studio in LA. So Blake, I don't know if have you been in Sound Kitchen, which is just right down the street? You weren't part of my scavenger hunt team.
That's right. You didn't let me on your team. That hurt my feelings.
So
that's why I was so mean to you at the beginning of this episode. I've been holding that for a while.
One of the most famous Christian recording studios, and I mean, they do a lot more than just Christian music, but they're two blocks up the street from us. And that's called Sound Kitchen. And so before Church Gear started, I bought and sold gear. And one day I had a keyboard for sale on eBay and somebody bought it and then reached out and said, hey, I'm in Nashville. Can I just swing by and pick it up? And I said, well, where are you at? And they said, we're in Cool Springs, just like right where, you know, it's 10 minutes from my house. And I said, well, no problem. I'm going out to lunch like I do on occasional days, Blake, probably getting some tacos. And I said, why don't I just bring the keyboard to you? And they said, no problem. And they gave me the address. And I was like, oh, you're at Sound Kitchen. Very cool. So I show up to Sound Kitchen. I've got this keyboard. I walk in and I hand it to one of the band members. And I said, what are you guys here for? And they said, oh, we're getting like tour rehearsals and prep. I said, that's awesome. What band are you? And they said, well, we're the backup band for Kelly Clarkson.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So Kelly was not there that day. I was disappointed about that.
They wouldn't let you in if she was there.
I think, you know, back in early Kelly Clarkson days, like, are you much of a Kelly Clarkson fan?
I grew up on American Idol, like, straight to my veins.
Okay. Like, when her big record came out, I do think I had a crush for a hot minute. Like, she was just kind of like a cool rock chick for a moment.
Does Shelly know this, Toby? We shouldn't record this.
I'm willing to tell Shelly when I have celebrity crushes. I have a lot of them. She gives me grief for it.
People are weird that way. This is a total tangent, but I've seen couples get in real fights in front of me when we ask about celebrity crushes. Some couples do not want to talk about that.
Does Allison mind that you have celebrity crushes?
No, because the way she talks about Logan Lerman, I should have left her by now. It's pretty brutal to sit next to your wife when she lusts after someone. We're getting too off trap here. Okay. Speaking of somebody that I've been lusting after.
Oh, my.
Fall Out Boys, front of house mix engineer, Chad Olick. Chad, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, guys. Thank you for having me.
Chad, do you feel uncomfortable in the fact that Blake now has a celebrity crush on you?
I'm actually kind of enamored by it. Yeah. I'm a little bit thrilled.
Blake, with your bit of man crush here, I wonder if he can sneak the truth and lie, if you're going to just, you know, you have the googly eyes now for Chad, that the lie's just going to blow past you.
Between the googly eyes and how well he wrote these, I think I have no chance, so let's do it.
But before you start, let me be honest. It's 4.5 truths and 1.5 lies.
What?
I like this. Now
so, our odds increase then?
We could get a half a point.
Okay.
All right. This is fun. Number one, I worked in both a high school and junior high school in special education. Number two, I worked for Elvis Presley and got to hang out with Priscilla for an afternoon.
Okay, I feel like he's much too young to have actually worked for Elvis, but...
Toby, I can't tell if that's your thinking face or your pooping face.
I have a cold right now, and you made me do a podcast, and I'm only here because Chad is amazing.
Number three, I moved out to LA just after high school graduation to become a famous musician.
A lot of people do that. I wouldn't be surprised.
Number four, I once got a hole in one on the 17th hole at Sawgrass.
That would be crazy.
Number five, when I first started mixing, I thought I would end up doing Broadway-style shows. That would be fun. Number six, and finally, I once got a kidney stone on tour, went to the hospital for treatment, checked myself out in time for the show, then after show, checked back into the hospital, and still made bus call.
That sounds like a production guy to me.
Yes.
Like a production warrior.
That's true. I'm not going to guess that one at all.
Okay. Well, I'm locking in on Elvis Presley because he's not old enough.
Perfect. I'm going for that hole in one. All right. So he's got Elvis. I got the hole in one.
And can I go for a half point here, Blake?
Sure.
Okay.
Well, then I guess we're both going for a half point then.
See, I'm going to say the half point is that he got a hole in one, but it was not the 17th hole at Sawgrass.
Well, then you're just taking mine. Fine. I'll take a half point on yours. There we go. All right, we've diversified. Chad, what's the lie and the half lie?
The lie is that I did not get a hole in one at Sawgrass, nor did I get a hole in one anywhere.
Ah, do I get half a point for that, Blake?
Depends on how far ahead you are, because I make the scores. You don't track it.
The half a lie is that I sort of worked for Elvis. I did his video tour that he did with the orchestra a few years back. And I did hang out with Priscilla for an afternoon in Memphis.
Okay. So you worked for Elvis long after he had passed away.
That's why it's a half a lie. Yeah.
Okay.
That still almost feels 85% true.
Blake, I feel like in this instance, you get a full point and I get half a point.
Fine.
Thank you.
Guys, I still don't understand how the Elvis story even happened. Like, he's no longer with us.
Okay, explain that to us, Chad.
So basically, they took all of his video footage that they had over the years between movies and live shows and whatnot and compiled it into just a concert that they had a full orchestra. They hired a local, they hired a U.S. orchestra. They didn't hire local orchestras. And they had a conductor from the U.K. who came over and conducted the orchestra at every show. And we did... I think we did 25 shows across the U.S., culminating with the show at the FedEx Forum in Memphis on I got a 50% chance on this. It was either on his birthday or his death day. And I can't remember which, and I'm going to get crucified for whichever one is wrong.
And were you mixing for that show?
I was not. I was just the production manager.
Okay. How was the show?
It was amazing. Like, even my daughter, who at the time was, she was probably 11, it really enjoyed the show.
And did you hear from any or very many attendees who, you know, were older and said, I saw Elvis in person, and like how it compared? Obviously, it's a totally different vibe, but.
Yeah, there were a few. Everybody seemed to really enjoy the show. It was a really good interpretation. They had done a good, Graceland had done a great job of extracting his vocal from live performances and integrating it into the show.
And Blake, can you name a single Elvis song?
Toby, my dad loves Elvis maybe more than he loves Jesus Christ. So yes, like my dad, I think he like sold most of his possessions in his early teen years to go see Elvis. And it's one of his like favorite, you know, when you have regrets, whatever the opposite of regret is, that he got to see him live.
I mean, his firstborn son was his biggest regret.
Well, yeah, but that's the bottom of the list.
So, okay, name an Elvis song then.
Toby, listen, I was deflecting. I don't know titles.
Oh,
I know all
gosh.
The songs.
You are such an embarrassing human being. Blake.
Look, you're putting me on the spot. I'm feeling the pressure.
I'm going to tell your dad after this.
You don't have to. I hope he doesn't listen to this one.
Okay, so you got a hole in one. Oh, no. That was your lie. You never.
That was a lie.
Yeah. I was like,
I play golf a lot, but I've not even come close to a hole in one.
I don't even think the pros, like many of them, never have a hole in one. Like that is. Yeah, I should have guessed that, Blake.
If you want a fun video, Google Tom Brady's hole-in-one where this drone follows the golf ball to the hole-in-one. It's one of the most amazing videos I've ever seen in my life. Tell us about the kidney stone on tour.
So this was in 2000 or 2001. I was working for the band Disturbed. We were in Philadelphia, and I got a massive pain in my lower back / side right after sound check. And I was like, that kind of hurts. And kind of wandered my way back in the back dressing room hallway, got maybe a dozen steps before I had to call on the radio to my tour manager and ask him to get me an ambulance because there was no way I was going another step. Got in the ambulance, went to the hospital, was there from 2 till about 7. So I was there about 5 hours or so. Show was coming up. So I did what you're supposed to do. As far as I'm concerned, what you're supposed to do, make the show happen. So I,
sick Toby. Chad has a backbone.
So I checked myself out of the hospital, did the show. As soon as the show was over, immediately took a cab back to the hospital, checked myself back in. So this is probably, we were support for Stone Temple Pilots at the time. So we were probably done by 9 o'clock. So I'm back in the hospital probably by 9:30. Bus call was at, I don't remember, 1 or 2 in the morning or something. Checked myself back out about a half hour before bus call, went back to the bus.
Wow.
What was the pain level like during the show?
I was on a lot of drugs, so it was fine.
That's how Toby is right now.
I know. Blake, you are normally a gigantic pain in my side, but somehow with all these drugs, I can manage.
Yeah, now I'm just a pain in your... Well, I don't want to make Ross bleep that again. So, Chad, you have some pretty epic stories in audio. So let's get into your background. Let's get the origin story. Give us a bit of your background, how you got your start in production, leading up to what you're doing today. I mean, your resume is so long, we couldn't fit it into this whole podcast, even if we started reading it. Like, it was quite impressive.
Thank you. So I started as an AV nerd in high school. I just kind of gravitated towards it. It fit my brain, so to speak. So I did that all through high school, and then looking for colleges, originally I was going to go to Musicians Institute out in Los Angeles. So I moved out to LA right after high school because I did, for some reason, thought I had some talent in the realm of playing music. Yeah, well, I find we all have talent. That wasn't my talent. So I got out there and checked out the school. The school didn't really, it didn't fit me. It didn't jive with what I wanted to do. Ended up bumping into another school kind of by accident after reading a advertisement in one of the local music rags, and ended up going to that school called the University of Sound Arts, which I believe went belly up about 10 months after I left.
You were holding it together, Chad.
Yes, it was all my tuition. So did that, got out of there, again, still trying to be a successful, you know, or trying to be a musician, never mind a successful one. At that point, I would have been happy just being able to play well. So I did that for a while and moved back to the New England area where I lived here for, I've lived here my whole life until then and ever since. Slowly started working in clubs, got really burnt out, left the club scene, started to work in special ed in junior highs and high schools. Did that for about 5 years, got an opportunity to work for a touring act, took the opportunity and haven't gone back.
So how long have you been in the touring world now?
Touring professionally since 1999. So 25, it'll be 25 years in the end of July.
And so did you start out like tour managing? Were you just, part of the crew? And then at what point did you get the opportunity to, you know, run front of house? And, you know, what was probably your first breakthrough moment at front of house where you felt like, oh my gosh, like I'm the man now?
Well, I'm still not sure I'm the man half the time. I started out actually mixing. I didn't do tour management or anything like that until partway through that first tour. We had a tour manager that was less than stellar. And I had done a lot of club management and stuff like that. So I kind of just got the job because I was there and got it by default.
Hey, same, me too.
So I did that. And I'd say my first kind of aha moment, or the first moment I thought I was doing something, was also one of the most horrifying moments of my career. Or at least it was definitely the most horrifying moment to that point, was we were doing a show in Virginia Beach at the amphitheater, one of those big radio shows, big festival show. And I was working for this band, Orange 9mm. We were on, middle of the day. It was 3 o'clock in the afternoon or whatever it was. I get up, it's my first time ever on a Yamaha PM4000. I get up and I do my line check. Everything's fine. Top of the show, unmute my channels, and nothing's coming out of the PA. I'm panicked, freaking out. Headphones, listen, I'm like, oh, I've got everything. The systems engineer comes over, looks, and he goes, the master was muted.
Whoops.
So my left, right bus was muted. Yeah. And I was a giant idiot. And so that was, but at that same moment, I was mixing a band in an amphitheater, something that I guess a lot of people get to do it, but it's probably not as many people that actually mix.
Yeah. And how long have you been with Fall Out Boy now?
10 and a half, coming up on 11 years.
Okay. So you've been through when did they start pumping out hits?
When I was in middle school, because they were my foundational band.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they started there. I think their first hit was in 2002 or three, maybe 2004. But then they went on hiatus from 2009 to 2013. They went on hiatus and I started in 2013, taking over. There was somebody there before me that started the 2013 run and, they parted ways and then I came in.
Okay.
Oh man. So you've been there ever since my songs Know What You Did in the Dark. Like he came in right when they relaunched and I was in college with my debate best friend who was also a Fallout fan. I don't know. I've been so excited my entire life watching that music video over and over again. Oh my goodness.
Is that one of your celebrity crushes?
All of Fallout Boy. Yes.
I mean, I'll let him know.
No, don't. Please don't.
So, Chad, you mentioned, I don't know if this is a passion or something you strive for, like trying to create recreate a studio mix in a live environment. What's your approach with Fall Out Boy? Are you guys using like a ton of tracks or do you just have a live band and you're trying to create a studio vibe out of that?
We do have tracks, but it's nothing... Put it this way, if the tracks were to shut off, with the exception of a couple songs that have massive strings or horns, any other track, if it were to shut off, I don't know that the general public would even know they shut off. Mm. It's all back in, little synth pads and tambourines and maracas and that sort of stuff. There's not a ton, or actually there's really nothing that the band can play live that is in the track. So it's all just added crap.
Yeah.
And some of it does, in my opinion, really help the song. There's parts of songs where that clap or that tambourine, you're like, oh no, I hear that predominantly on the record. Mm-hmm. And if it's not there live, I at least would miss it. I don't know that a general fan in the crowd would go, oh, where was that clap? There was a clap on the record. Where did that go? But having said that, I just do my best to make it as sonically clean. It's never going to be the record. It's never, no matter how hard I try, they don't play it the exact same. There's too many X factors, the room, everything else, but I do my best to make it as sonically clean and really for me as enjoyable as listening to a record.
Yeah. What is your sort of miking approach to the band? Like how many mics are you putting on the drum set? What do the guitar amps get? Are they plugging in direct?
So for the amps, there are none. We had amps when I first got here, but now they're one guy's on a Fractal, the other guy's on a Neural, and our bass player is on a Line 6 Helix. The only mics on stage are the drums and the vocals. Okay. Actually, they're the only mics, period. And it's all Shure product. We're very, very indebted to them and their support of us over the years. And, the kit is, see if I can do this from memory without looking at anything. It's a 52 and a 91 on the kick, a 56 on the snare top, a 32 on the snare bottom, a 56 on the side snare, 98 amps on the toms, and one KSM 137s on the crashes, hats, and ride.
Okay. And are the guitarists using any like dummy cabs on stage or?
No, not in years. Our stage is very, very clean. It's this last tour was a very theatrical, very Broadway kind of look to it. Had a giant proscenium and four or five scene changes with an inflatable tree, an inflatable dog head, a whole bunch of theater stuff.
Interesting. I'm wondering if like a, rock fan from the 70s, 80s, and 90s suddenly transformed and like took a time machine to the current day and age and then saw a show. It'd be, first of all, why does it sound so good? And secondly, where are all the amps? It's just a different world.
Yeah. I mean, and luckily for me, and I say luckily as a front of house guy, Fall Out Boy, really, we only went with live cabinets on stage, I think one tour. Other than that, we've always, even when we had, analog tube heads, we were still using isocabs. Mm-hmm. So they were, backstage, under the stage, wherever you could put them.
I mean, even in arenas that sort of, is it more for microphone bleed or more for just too much noise coming from the stage?
Mostly bleed, to be honest. I mean, if you have a single 412 in an arena, it's not really, well, I shouldn't say that. If you go see AC/DC, I don't know how Pab mixes that with the sheer volume coming off the stage. The guy's a magician.
Yeah.
I've been fortunate that I've worked with a lot of bands that, almost every band I've worked with has been all live cabs. This is the first band that I've worked with in a long time that is, strictly simulation. Anybody else I've worked with has been dummy cabs or live cabs or a combo of the two.
Yeah.
And, for me, it's more just the bleed, the other bleed into the mics. And to be honest, even the bleed from the guitar into the drums, mm-hmm. I'm not so worried about the stage volume per se. It's probably not that much louder than the snare drum, or hopefully it's not that much louder than the snare drum.
Blake, on a side note, name one song from AC/DC.
Dude, I don't know.
Chad, this is what I have to deal with on a daily basis.
Listen, I was too busy listening to Fall Out Boy my whole life, all right?
Under the cork tree,
Under the Cork Tree, Infinity on High, Hum Hallelujah. I mean, this was my band. This was the band that I bought individual songs for my iPod. Like, I didn't even buy an album. I was, like, just buying individual songs because I didn't know you could buy the whole album.
And what I feel like, Fall Out Boy would think, we appreciate all of our music, but it's sad, Blake, that none of the music which influenced us to create Fall Out Boy out of. Sorry.
I'm about to say, don't you mess that up. This is how you feel every episode with me, isn't it? When I'm like, who's Queen?
Chad, talk to us about your sort of vocal approach. I mean, that's probably the hardest thing to recreate a studio sound, especially when, you know, singers are of all different skill sets and, you know, you can make a singer sound a lot of different ways in the studio with the tools. But, you know, what do you have to do live to give kind of that vibe?
So, I mean, luckily for us, or me particularly, Patrick is a really strong singer. He's, you know, he'll tell me ahead of time if he's going to have a rough night, and I'll duck him down a hair in the mix compared to normal. But generally it's a pop mix, you know, and I say pop mix, meaning vocal a bit on top of the band rather than a rock or metal mix where the vocal is a bit tucked in. I recreate his studio chain as close as possible. Obviously we're not using a Neumann mic. You know, he's on a Shure KSM-9. But the rest of the chain is similar. It's a Neve 1073 into a Pultec EQ and into a LA2A style compressor. And I add a Rupert Neve 545, which is the primary source enhancer, to help cut out some of the any of the extraneous stage noise and PA noise that comes back.
And is that, are you talking all outboard pieces or is that?
Oh yeah, okay. All outboard. The only thing I'm using that's a plug-in is on Joe's guitar. I'm using the Distressor and SSL channel strip through a UAD live rack.
Okay.
Only because I ran out of analog cross ties to my Galaxy. So that'll change on the next tour. I have the analog pieces to make his work. I just ran out of tie lines.
Yeah. And do you like having the outboard gear at your disposal?
I do. I don't know. I mean, I think it sounds better. Do I think it sounds a ton better? I'm not sure. But what I think it does for me is it enables me to be more creative and think more and try and create more with it. I don't want to say it elevates my game as far as like, because I have X piece of gear, I'm better. It just makes me think, and I'm like, oh, I've got a knob I can turn. And what happens when I turn it? Is it going to be better? Is it going to be worse? If I change the signal path, you know, is this going to be better or worse?
And are you using vintage pieces or more, reissues and modern Neve stuff?
It's all pretty modern. I use a lot of my stuff is in the 500 rack. So I get all but... I think the only things that aren't 500 rack for me as far as comps and gates and stuff is my left right bus is not, and Patrick's guitar is not, and Joe's guitar won't be once I get the tie lines.
Yeah. Blake and I have a good friend who, he was creative director for John Mayer for about 12 years, and he would talk about, when they would warm up John's vocal chain during sound check is all vintage stuff. And so they would basically have to just, you know, work out all the noise in the potentiometers. And so he said, you know, they turn on the system and you would just hear this like as they like worked out the noise. And I'm like, well, if you, if John has his signature sound and he, you know, you can afford to do that in a live setting, heck, why not?
Yeah. No, most of the stuff I have, really all the stuff I don't have. The closest thing I have to vintage is I have an Eventide H8000.
Okay.
Which isn't, it's not really vintage. It's only about 8 or 10 years old.
Yeah.
So,
Are you using any, tuning for the vocals in the live set?
No, he's really solid. And kind of, I'm going to have to paraphrase because I don't remember exactly what he said. But he basically said, hey, if I suck one night, I suck. Mm. Yeah. That's a paraphrase. It's not exactly how he put it, but he was basically saying it's on me. If I'm good, I'm good. If I'm bad, I'm bad. And I don't want to cheat the fans for, again, not his words, just kind of a paraphrase of what he said.
Yeah. I'm sure so many of our listeners right now are like, oh my gosh, I wish I had the vocal talent that we didn't need tuning in a live setting.
I mean, I've worked for a bunch of bands and I've only worked for a couple, to be honest, that could really use it. Most of them, do they go out once in a while? Sure. Mm-hmm. But most of them are more solid than they think.
Yeah. Are you using many plugins?
No, just those ones on Joe's guitar.
Okay.
Currently.
So tell us about your, just the basics of your audio setup that you're doing with Fall Out Boy right now.
Sure. So I'm running a Digico Quantum 5, and I run that. I actually run 48K. I don't run 96. Mm-hmm. And I have a double 18 space rack beside me that has all of my analog comps and gates, as well as all of my analog, but they're digital effects, you know, the Eventides and Lexicons and whatnot. And that all runs into an Antelope Galaxy 64. And that I run into a OptiCore DD2FRX, I think is the model. And that transfers everything into OptiCore so that I can run it in the loop with the Digico as a, it shows up essentially as another rack. So I don't have to deal with Matty or Dante or any other conversion format.
Mm-hmm. And how about your PA?
I'm on the Claire Cohesion PA. Okay. I've been a Claire client for, since they bought Shoko back in early 2000s, I guess it was.
Yeah.
I've been a big fan of most of what they've put out there since I've been there. And I'm a real big fan of the Cohesion line.
So if you showed up to an event and you couldn't have a Claire rig, but they provided you with something else, do you have something that, you know, other favorites or something that you're like, oh, I've always wanted to try mixing on a X?
I'll be honest. I think anybody that's too particular about a PA is just, in my opinion, being particular to be particular. You know, like any brown box or black box should do. Yes, will I have to work harder? Do I have to EQ more or less or whatever? Yeah, probably. Yeah. But at the end of the day, I should be able to make any box sound like my show with a little effort. Having said that, I would like a D&B rig second.
Okay. Blake, it's kind of how I look at you. Like any idiot in a black shirt will do. Like just put them in the chair next to me and we'll edit out whatever nonsense.
That's true. We've never A-B tested. We've never put someone else in the chair. Maybe we could make this podcast so much better if we kicked me out a long time ago.
I mean, you replaced me with Brian the last time I was sick. That's another reason I had to jump on, because you guys fired me last time.
Yeah. HR will come for you. You got to show up every day.
You're going to show up to an episode one day and the doors are going to be locked and you're going to see somebody else in your seat and be like, no.
I'll be like, man, I can't believe they found someone to do all the other stuff they don't want to do.
Blake, you like to describe yourself as a mixologist when it comes to craft cocktails, and I'll give you props. Like, you make a pretty good drink. So,
well, you're drunk when you're tasting them. So,
how important to you is it that you have your favorite tools as opposed to, look, Toby, I can make a great drink with any bourbon?
Well, I do think Chad makes a fun point there on like how any box will do. You just might have to work harder or adjust. And I kind of thought to myself, the better you get at your craft at something, you can work with just about anything because your skill overtakes your tools. So yeah, I could probably make a good drink with any different tools. Now, you take away any great bourbon, and sure, I'm sure for Chad, this would be like, what if we gave him, what's the worst speaker? you know what I mean? Like he probably...
Do you want to alienate people or do you?
But you get what I'm saying.
A PVSP3. Let's go with the old school. Nobody doesn't even make it anymore.
I was going to say PV.
Yeah. Like if you give me some Yellowstone bourbon, that's going to be hard for me to make a good drink, but I'll do my darndest.
Yeah. Yeah. Chad, I do think, and I think this is what you're saying. It's a bit of an immaturity in just creative people to say, well, I can only make great art with these tools. Like,
yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's immaturity or it's I'm not really sure what it is. I think people just fall into the trap of like, oh, I can only use D&B or I can only use L Acoustics or pick your manufacturer, you know, like even with desks, you know, like, yeah, is the Ravage series great? Yeah. Is the Digico stuff great? Yeah. I mean, at least I think so, you know. They're all just tools. And in theory, I should be able to step onto any console and make anything sound the way I want it to sound. Mm-hmm. Yes, maybe I have to dig harder or try and work around it. Like if you give me a Mackie 32.8, I can probably do my show sort of, you know, it'll be close enough. Listen, it'll be close enough that most of the audience won't know. Yeah. Will I know? Yeah, I'll know. I'll be bummed the entire night. But most of the crowd wouldn't necessarily know.
Back in year one of Church Gear, I knocked over a console and I was like, oh no, I'm going to get fired. And Toby was like, it's a Mackie that's broken anyways. We moved on.
Exactly.
So speaking of Mackies, if you could have any mixer for nostalgia, or you're just like, no, I just love that mixer, what audio mixer, anything of the last, you know, 30 years, would you take out if it was in pristine working condition and the environment said, yep, that's great?
That's a really good question. It wouldn't be digital per se. I would have to say probably the Shoko Show Console, which was essentially a Harrison console that was digitally controlled. Hmm. So completely analog EQs, preamps, everything through a digital surface. And it had its issues. It was a lot of people said you had to carry two to make one work.
That's what Toby says about me, but it's not true. Yeah.
But yeah, that would probably be my choice of any console, assuming that you could get it in perfect working order. You mm-hmm. didn't have to worry about it crashing. It was, yeah.
Yeah.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. So most of our listeners, they're in a church setting. And so pros and cons of that, they're usually not mixing a band as, you know, polished as Fall Out Boy. They have varying levels of, you know, volunteers, or some churches have professional musicians, but they also do have the advantage of they're in the same room in the same conditions every single week. Do you have any specific tips or tricks that you would say would help in that environment to create a better mix for them?
I mean, one thing I'll say, I mean, I'm not super into the church side of audio. I have helped out, and I'm going to help out another church next week. I have helped out a couple of churches over the past couple of years. I'll say the musicianship there is usually way above par. It's generally way above any bar you're going to walk into and listen to, you know, whatever bar band you're listening to. Having said that, the challenges are trying to keep your volume at a reasonable level, you know, for your parishioners, and, you know, gain before feedback is going to be a problem at some point, whether it be with the pastor or priest, or even with the band. A lot of these churches, except for, you know, obviously the mega churches, a lot of these smaller churches have essentially a PA on a stick. Mm-hmm. And you'd have to work a lot harder. And I find going into some of these places, what I find is people are overcompressing, kind of overcomplicating, you know, the whole KISS mentality of keep it simple. It really, I think, works a lot in these kind of environments or small clubs. You know, try not to overcomplicate it. Just because you see somebody else using, you know, double busing and stuff like that, and using bus compression, and it may not work in your situation. And maybe it'll work fine. It's worth trying, but don't get married to it.
Yeah. I remember when I was in my early 20s and my band was recording drums, and I wanted to track them myself because I love the studio environment. And so we got the opportunity to rent an entire outboard rack of like the actual vintage, like 1176s, a Neve 33609. Is that right?
Maybe.
LA2A 1073. And so, you know, we tracked that night and got like four songs done. And then I was listening back and I'm like, man, everything sounds just, it wasn't right. And then I looked and I was like, I overcompressed the heck out of everything just because I had all these new toys at my fingertips. Sure. And wanted to use them all. And so I had to sheepishly go to the drummer and be like, dude, can you re-record all of those songs again? And he was like, he listened back and he's like, I see what you're saying now. And yes, I will do it. By the end of the session, like after 3 days, he had gloves and Band-Aids on his hands. His hands had swollen up because he...
Toby, you know, did you commit a war crime?
A little bit. Sorry, Hugo. Love you.
Man, that is painful. Okay, Jed, I have just a selfish question here that I didn't put on the outline. What is your favorite or couple of favorite Fall Out Boy songs to mix in a live setting? What are the songs that you're like, oh man, I can't wait to do this one? Or, you know, sideways question, what are the hardest ones? You're like, oh gosh, this is the one that after I get through this one in the night, I'm like, it's going to be easier.
So I think the most fun, it's kind of a toss up. There's a couple of like big guitar anthem style songs. You said one of them earlier, Hum Hallelujah, is super fun to mix, as is Disloyal Order of Water Buffaloes, again, just these big guitar anthematic songs, a song. And some of these songs, I don't know the full title to, because as a Fall Out Boy fan, I'm sure you realize some of the titles are a little lengthy at times. So there's a song called Doldrums, and I don't know if that's the entire name of the song or if it's just what we call it. But that song is also super fun to mix. As far as hard songs, there's really, they're all kind of on par as far as like level of hardness. I think some of the tougher ones are the ones that do have a bunch of track. If they've got a ton of horn or string to try and make it kind of tuck in and seem natural and not seem like this track blowing out of nowhere. That's probably the toughest thing. Like a song Irresistible or one of those songs that have just a big, you know, big horn thing.
And what is like, I know some of the hits, but what is like, is there the one song that everybody came to see? And so like that is the crescendo of the show.
I don't, because they have a, like they have legitimately 8 or 10 really big songs and a bunch of other songs that are kind of big. I would have to say either Light 'Em Up or Centuries are kind of the two, or Thanks for the Memories. Or Arms Race. I, you know, again, it's like, it, I guess it depends on whether they're older fans or newer fans. The newer fans are more the Centuries and Light 'Em Up, and the older fans are more the Memories and Arms Race and Dance Dance.
I was going to say Dance Dance, and then I was also going to say My Songs Know What You Did in the Dark, because that's the bridge between old fans and new fans, and that's the song that told the old fans, hey, they back tough again. Mm. Like, oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah, My Songs Know What You Did in the Dark was the comeback song, and it blew up. It did, you know, it did great numbers and did a lot for them.
I'm going to watch that music video right after we are done with this.
So, Chad, if you could speak to 20-year-old Chad and say, listen here, youngster, I've learned a few things. Let me give you some advice as you get into this whole audio thing. What would you say to your younger self when you're just starting out in audio production?
Part of it would be nothing to do with audio per se. You have 2 ears and one mouth. Try and use them proportionally. Mm. You know, if you listen twice as much as you talk, you're going to get more out of a lot of things. But as far as audio goes, for me, the tough thing transitioning from club to arena or shed was in clubs. A lot of times you get that superpower feeling, like, you know, you get the PAs right on top of you. Everything's right in your face. And it can be hard or impossible to necessarily get that exact same vibe live. In an arena. And I see a lot of people coming out, myself included, back in the day, coming out, and you end up with symphony of kick drum, and it's just, you know, the kick drum's on stun, and everything else is kind of buried underneath, and you know they're trying to get that chest rattle, that movement, and that's one of the things I would tell myself at that. And for God's sake, don't mix so loud. Yeah, younger me came out of the gate at 106, 107. Ooh. You know, yeah, exactly. It was too loud.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, now a Fall Out Boy show, we peak, like an absolute peak is like 103.
Okay.
You know, the show runs about 101. Mm-hmm. You know, on an LEQ, like on a 15-minute LEQ, we're probably at like 99. Mm-hmm. You know, somewhere in that ballpark. But you know, I probably run about a 101 realistic average per song.
Yeah.
I'm sure my ears have suffered some pretty good damage over the years between playing music and then doing all this. Oh, and wear ear protection. Mm. You know, when you're not mixing, like if you go out and listen to somebody else, sure, pull out your ears for a minute, listen to their mix, and then put your ears back in. Mm-hmm. You know, put your phone, your plugs back in, and save your hearing for when you need it.
Yeah. Well, Blake, you have two mouths and one ear. What do you run your mouths at on a, or I assume you're talking A-weighted?
Yes. I do 170 beats per minute on my mouth, which is half as fast as my heart goes. Chad, I want to ask you a really nerdy gear question that I'm not going to know enough to say it right. Toby, forgive me if you already asked this earlier, and I was too dumb to understand you said it.
Quite possible.
You have almost an encyclopedic knowledge of all the gear that you're running, like down to your kick drum mics. We've talked about your console. We've talked about your PA. If you could only pick one of them, let's just say everything's going to be a grab bag. Like we're playing fantasy football. You got the first overall pick. You don't know what any of your other gear is going to be for a show. You just get to pick one specific piece. What's that one that you're like, man, I'm going to build my foundation on that. That's the one I'm going to grab.
Wow. That's a really good question. I'd say, man, do microphones count as a package or is it each microphone individually?
No, I think, you know, what's the most important part of the chain for you? You're like, look, if I have a Mackie and some PV and I have great mics, I can still make a good mix out of it. Or would you say the PA or the mixer? Or?
I'd probably end up going console. I'd say give me my Quantum 5 and give me a grab bag of everything else, and I feel like it'll be closest to what I'm used to.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So tell us. I assume with your varied history of artists that you work with and countless number of shows, that you've had a few near misses or big ol' misses. Like, do you have any crazy disaster stories that you can share with us to entertain through shock and awe?
Yeah, I got at least two that I can tell everybody.
he lost his kidney stones in the other ones.
Back in 2000, must have been 13 or 14. It was one of my first tours with Fall Out Boy. It was our first year. It was 14 because it was my first European tour. I was on the profile surface at the time. And I, at the time, was using a ton of plugins, as I feel like everybody else did on the profile surface. So I needed my console to be loaded with five engines, and it didn't come out with five engines. It only came out with four. Unbeknownst to me, I never checked it. My fault for not checking it. Company's fault for not checking it. You know, there's a lot of things, but it lasted through most of the tour. We got to, it was either Birmingham or Manchester, England, in the arena there. And about halfway through the set, it stopped. It decided it had enough. So it shut down completely. It took us, it felt like it took 4 hours, but it probably took a 3 or 4 minutes at least to boot back up. Meanwhile, the Patrick, our singer, is sitting on the downstage edge with an acoustic guitar, singing just acoustically to as many people as can hear him.
Yeah.
While I'm trying to get this whole thing rebooted, dying inside and cursing as loud and profanely as I possibly can the entire time. Swearing at anybody that comes near me. Yeah, like it was as close to violence as I feel I've come at a show. And then fast forward to 20, either 18 or 19, we were headlining the Leeds and Reading Festival. And at the, I think it was the Leeds Festival, my network switch went bad. So I lost all of my plug. At the time, I was still running a bunch of plugins. I'd lost all of my plugins. So I didn't lose all of the mix, but I lost enough of it to make it really bad. So that was another super panicked. I wasn't smart enough at that point to have a dump button to dump all of my inserts in one fell swoop. So I had to go through and uninsert every channel that had an insert on it, which was probably 30% of the channels.
Yeah. So having outboard gear saved you from more disasters potentially?
I mean, that same disaster could still be there. I could still lose my inserts. You know, my DD2 could go down, or my Antelope could go down and lose all of my inserts. But now I have a dump button. So if that happens, I hit one button, I'm out of it for a few seconds.
Blake, I wonder if we can get a dump button here where, like, you're just trailing off into nonsense and I just press that button and you just disappear into a hole in the floor?
Dude, that would be perfect. I wouldn't have to work or even pretend to work at that point. That'd be great. You know,
I feel like you could do that. There's definitely enough production that you could find a way.
You know, Nashville Shores is not that far off from here. We could just put me right into the gutter, you know, the sewage system, float me to Nashville Shores. It'd be great.
Yeah.
And I'll drag you with me. You know, Chad, we love to wrap all of our episodes with a tech takeaway, which is kind of your unique piece of advice that you would tell to a room of production people. So what would be a tech takeaway you would give our crew of listeners here?
Well, for this, I'm going to actually put on my production manager hat more than my audio engineer hat. Don't be super precious about your gear. You know, like, just because you think you have to have a Neve preamp, you probably don't. you know, the odds of that piece or that one piece of gear that you're being so specific about that you have to have being the be all end all that's going to make or break your show is probably not true. And you're probably making your life a lot more difficult than you need it to. You know, going back to the thing earlier, kind of a PA is a PA. Yeah, they're all different. Some I like better than others. But at the end of the day, I should be able to do my job with any of them. And that really should go for any console, any mic, any piece of outboard. You know, unless something does one specific thing and that thing only, then I think you should be able to work around it. Any, you know, are there better reverbs than others? Sure. You know, are Bacastis better than Alesis? Yes. But could I make an Alesis work, especially in a live environment? I think I could. You know, the studio environment, yeah, that's a whole nother ball of wax there. But live with, 10,000 screaming kids, can you really hear the difference?
You know, Toby, that resonates with me deeply. You just got to work with what you got. You know, I have to work with you all the time.
You're going to be mean to me again.
I traded
you?
Brian, gosh, you know, for you. I tried to kick you out today. Chad, that's really good. I appreciate that perspective. Man, you want to plug anything, or are you like, you know what? I'm good to go. I don't need anybody reaching out to me.
Oh, I mean, I have Instagram. If people want to follow me there, they can. It's soundman00 on Instagram. But yeah, I don't, I mean, I use a lot of cool products, and you know, if people want to check those out, that's fine, but I don't, you know, I'm not paid. So it's all stuff that I just really enjoy.
Did you hear that? Sure. Send him an affiliate link. Well, Chad, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, listeners, it's time for Church Tech Confessionals, the time for any church tech to anonymously confess the worst thing they've ever done in church production. Here's one now.
Church Tech Confessional.
So this was about 5 or 6, maybe 7 years ago. I was a very young tech on staff here, and we were doing a middle school all-nighter, kind of like a lock-in, where all the kids would be in our gym and in our other building, and they'd be playing games all night long, and there'd be a movie and different things. But I was real tired from working already that day, and it was approaching the 2 a.m. mark. And after the movie ended up playing in our youth room, I just kind of laid down in the tech booth for a little bit and ended up falling asleep for about 2 hours. I don't know if any kids were in the room. I don't know what they did while they were in there. I don't know if other things around campus got done that I was supposed to do, but I know I woke up at 4 a.m. going, oh no, with all of the lights off, alone in the tech booth, with 2 more hours to go. I think everything went fine. I don't think there were any injuries or anything that year.
Hey, if you have your own 3 to 5 minute church tech confessional, record it and send it to podcast@churchgear.com. And don't worry, we'll apply a voice changer and you'll be 100% anonymous. Your pastor will never know.
Okay, Blake, I've been working on some jingles for our new website launch. So I've got churchy, churchy, church, church gear.
Toby, what have I told you about singing on the podcast? It doesn't work. But you know what is working? Our new website. You can actually get it to load on your phone. You can actually buy a new piece of gear without your phone bursting into flames.
Well, what if I spelled it out like C-H-U-R-C-G-E-R?
Toby, stop. That is not working. But you know what is working? The search bar on our website. You can actually search speakers and speakers will appear. No joke, that didn't always work.
Okay, what if I just did something like go to churchgear.com?
You know what? That one works.